Welcome everyone to the American Carpet Podcast, where we discuss all things carp related in the USA. Featuring anglers' interviews, stories, and monthly competitions with traditional US and Euro anglers, fly anglers, and anyone who has a passion for this incredible fish, the carp, Cyprinus carpio. Much maligned and misunderstood, and undoubtedly one of the finest sport fish to be targeted here in the USA. This is where we, the guilty ones, can meet. My name is Sean Manning of the American Carp Society, and I'm grateful to be your host. Welcome, everybody. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't done so already and share with your friends. Today, our guest is a friend of the show, an American Carp Society member and winner of the 2019 Mill Creek Cup, along with his partner, Mr. Frank Kessler, and could be described as the most interesting U.S. carp angler on the circuit today. Welcoming our friend and yours, Mr. Jake Downing.
Dang it.
Welcome, Jake. Thanks for joining me, bud.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So I wanted to ask you, a lot of people are probably already familiar with you through Big Carp Tackle. How many years have you been there with David now?
I guess that's like four or five
years.
Somewhere in there, yeah.
Yeah. How did that all come about? How did you actually how did that all happen?
It's actually a pretty good story, to be fair. I had actually a buddy flying in from the UK, Pete McKenna.
Right.
And he was coming out to do, we'd already come through once. He hung out with us in Texas, but he wanted to do Dale Hollow. So I was like, all right, I'm down. And so I had asked for like a month in advance, a week off. And my boss at the time said no.
Right.
I was like, well, in that case, just, you know, I'll just quit because he's going to be there for 2 weeks.
Right.
I'll just go fishing for two.
Right.
And then, so, you know, at the time, I was like, all right, that's fine. So I, you know, had enough time to look for another job for the time I got back. And I actually found a job knocking solar panels, selling door to door in like the Carolinas. They had some really good tax incentives.
Right.
As well as the federal on top of the state they had going out there. So I had some buddies that we did that in Austin with, and then ended up doing that in the Carolinas. And I was there for about 3 weeks after fishing Dale Hollow for two. And we had bounced around from like Myrtle Beach to Charleston to this other even smaller town. And it was going all right. We got a couple sales, but door to door just wasn't for me.
Right.
And I saw that Facebook post and I was like, I will kick myself in the butt if I don't at least apply.
I see.
You know, and so, you know, Dave was like, all right, when are you coming? As soon as I called him.
Cool.
So he was like,
well, that worked out well. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah, that worked out well.
I stayed for a couple more days and then got on the road, drove 2 days to Oklahoma.
And there you were. Now, you mentioned Austin, because you originally started out in Austin, didn't you?
Like fishing
down there and stuff.
Up.
Is that where you, so you're from Austin originally?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. And when did you start carp angling down there? When did
Man,
you get into it?
It was just kind of like overnight. I was like, all right, I like fishing. I've always been like the fisherman of the family.
Right.
You know, I used to do a lot of hunting as a kid. And now I was just like, I want to figure this carp fishing thing out. What's up with this $250,000 fish?
Is that how you heard about it? You heard about it?
Yeah, you just, you know, you hear that Austin's got awesome fishing for carp.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, like, let me do some research. So I got on the YouTubes and was doing my research, and everyone says they use these boilies and that. So I made my own boilies and started throwing them out, and I started catching some bigger fish, but like they were catfish, but they were bigger. And
yeah.
I was just like, oh, something's going on here. Like something. So finally I caught a carp and that thing ripped my arm off. Like, and it freaked, the reel would have never given up that it was a bad reel unless I had just bought all the new carp, like set up from Cabela's, and
right.
I was so excited. And yeah, man, it just took off from there. After that, I started getting in contact with some of the locals, with the Austin carp anglers and those guys.
Cause there's a lot of carp, there's
a lot of
anglers down there, isn't there? A lot of carp anglers down in Austin.
Right. Well, you know, it's always growing.
Yeah.
Do
you get to fish with them a lot still? Because I know, you know, being up in Oklahoma, do you get to fish with them?
I don't, you know, obviously don't get to fish them as much as I like, but that's kind of the same scenario for anything.
Yeah.
you know, it's hard to get them out of of Austin, to be fair. But right. every now and again, you can tempt them with some good lakes, you know, not too far. But we kind of like to meet halfway if we do.
Yeah.
So, you know, Mill Creek isn't a bad spot.
Yeah. I mean, and let's face it. I mean, if you live in Austin, you're pretty much spoiled, you know, for some massive buff down there.
Within an hour away.
Like, yeah.
I wish everything's at least an hour away for me. Like.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I know Wayne had met you a couple of times before when he was traveling, and I know you're also good friends with Eric Mayberry. So I think the first time we met, actually, wasn't it, was 2018 at the very first Mill Creek Social. You came down to hang out with Eric and Joey, didn't you?
Yeah, I think that's the first time I met you.
Yeah.
And that was actually really cool. Honestly, I had been fishing at Toledo the week before.
Right.
And I was looking at getting, you know, into that social with y'all because I had just seen it on Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, that's cool. Maybe I should go out there since I'm still off and it's on the way and that'll work. And so got to go check out what, you know, the American Carp Society had going on over there. It was really cool to see the turnout.
It was really cool for you, you know, you come down and everybody to meet and stuff like that. And it started off something. I mean, let's face it, the following year you showed up with Frank Kessler and you took the trophy, didn't you?
Yeah, on my birthday too.
That's right. I remember we all sang happy birthday to you.
And it's actually even a good story there. I had been on the search for a car.
Yeah.
I was up in the air whether or not I was going to go just because I hadn't found the right car, you know. And I got it done within the week before. I bought a car and then drove it down to Texas.
Yeah. So. No, I remember it was cool because Frank was calling me.
I was like, you know, if I can get a car, Frankie, I'll be down there. If not, I can't get down there. So it was a last minute thing and it worked out.
It was. And I know it was last minute because Frank called me literally a few days before saying, you still have spots. Can we get in? And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, come on down.
Right.
Can you tell us, Jake, because that is Mill Creek is not an easy water, you know, and we'll go into some stories, you know, but can you tell us how you guys approach the lake? It's not an easy water to fish. There aren't a large number of fish in the lake and they don't give themselves up easily.
When I know I'm fishing like tournament style and there's going to be bait in the water just about anywhere you go, you have to step it up a little bit because they have options. Like,
yeah,
I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. You can always get lucky and nick a couple, but if you really want to get them there and keep them there, you kind of got to layer it up and get different levels just to first get them interest, then get some nutrients, and then get, you know, them feeding and staying there.
Yeah.
So they don't go anywhere else.
Yeah.
So for me, small particles starting off with, and then you just kind of move up. And honestly, I was noticing, like, when I was keeping fish in the sack, that it was like pack bait, hemp seed, and then the next day it was like hemp seed and tiger nuts.
Yeah.
And then, you know, by then it was over, but I was like, you know, if I had a day or two more, maybe they would have moved up to the boilies.
They probably would.
So
yeah,
it's for me, I really like using small baits.
Right.
I always have, because it gives, you know, it always keeps them
interesting,
a little bit of reward to find it. And,
yeah,
you know, a lot of people tend to lean towards the larger baits, and it's not that I don't get it, but I think you're really limiting your chances of a bite,
especially over a short period of time. You got to get them interested really, really quick. And I think you're right. If you'd have spent two or three more days on there, because you had some beautiful fish out there. I mean, they are.
Yeah, they were like all the same fish. It was ridiculous. They were like 22 to 24, every single one of them.
And the shape of them in there, too, is very.
Yeah, well, that's a lake, you know.
It's so cool. The genes, the genetic pull of those fish in there.
They got that seriously deep body.
They do.
It's
and
awesome.
So even the smaller ones there are just beautiful to, you know, to catch, obviously, take pictures of and stuff like that. Now, did you and Frank both take the same approach to the swim?
No, Frank, I didn't really bring enough. I didn't think it was going to be like that. And again, I was so shorthanded last minute. I could have definitely brought more if I was a little bit more prepared, but you know, the stuff that was working, that was really, it wasn't even so much about like a lot of bait. It was just keeping it going in. So they always had something.
Yeah. And you had
to, you know, you put a big pile and they get stuck on it. And then it's like, they're not going to move to your hook bait either.
Yeah.
So you have to like little and often all the time or else, you know, because you're also dealing with the bullheads in there as well.
Well, I remember in the video, in the interview we did for you for the film, that you, it was like catfish, catfish, turtle, then a carp, mm-hmm. then a catfish, catfish, another turtle, then a carp.
Yeah, so that swim definitely kept me busy as well. I mean, activity isn't bad. Small fish attract big fish.
Like, yeah.
Feeding fish is a feeding fish. Doesn't matter what the species is.
Yeah.
And other fish know that. Like,
now, did you take the same, Jake, did you take, because that cold snap came in right at the beginning of the tournament, didn't it? We had like 85 degrees. And then it dropped down to like 30, high 30s or something, didn't it?
Yeah. You know, to be fair, I don't think that was really that big of an issue. And I think it has to do with more like I didn't have to move because I just moved right. my bivvy like 100 yards. And so I think everyone else got real bummed because when it rained, it was right when we were getting
set up
on our pegs.
Yeah.
And then it, like 30 minutes after that, it chilled out. But yeah. I didn't have that issue. So I don't know if it was just a mental thing, everyone getting set up no, in the rain.
I think you're right. I think it was because I mentioned I went around Wayne and
because I know what's in that lake. Like I'm going to fish it hard no matter what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. We went round to a number of the contestants, a number of the anglers, and just said, look, just chill out for like an hour, and it'll all be gone. You know, because mm-hmm. you start setting up in the rain and you're completely drenched and stuff. So now did yeah. There were a number of anglers, and this is the interesting thing. You had anglers to the pegs of you to the left of you, and you had mm-hmm. anglers to the pegs of you to the right of you that were blanking. Okay, they weren't mm-hmm. catching anything. What do you think, and you probably already mentioned it, but what do you think made the difference for you? I mean, because you were really active.
Right, I think that's exactly it. I mean, those guys kind of were just sitting on their hands and, you know, waiting. And to be fair, I think a lot of them were coming with like a social mentality.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, it wasn't even so much I'm trying to win. It's like I know what's in that lake and I want to catch a good fish because I just got a brand new car and it's my birthday and I'm not here to just sit around. Like,
good man. Yeah. So, no, you obviously gave it some thought and it was very purposeful too because whenever Wayne Clayton yeah, or I well, would come around, you guys were on it. You were working your butts off, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of copied – I really like to fish millet
yep.
on top of the hemp. And then that's that small bait. Just they don't really get full on it,
yeah.
but it's nice and white. And then every now and again, they find a hemp seed, which they like.
Yeah.
So it's like you get a bulk bait that they can't fill up on that they like. And they're just constantly looking for it. And they see it all the time because it's everywhere.
Yeah. I think,
and that just keeps them in the area.
And you approached
it. And then you start putting the baits that actually get the larger fish, but that didn't happen. They were all the same freaking fish.
you approached it the same way that Andy and Clayton did the year before. They were fishing in two pegs over from you, and they won it last year from doing exactly the same thing. They were very, very, very active.
Right.
And I think that really is the key thing in that lake because there isn't a large head of fish in there. It's not mm-hmm. a massive head of fish. And I know anglers, mm-hmm. you know, that had traveled out of state that were used to showing up at kind of runs lakes, you know, they were all depressed right. after 2 to 3 hours because they hadn't had a run. And I'm like, wow. Guys, yeah, it's a little bit of a different approach.
Like, yeah. You're fishing for one or two fish. Yeah. Like, it's funny because I've gone back out there a couple times and every time I fish it, I catch one fish.
Right.
And it's like, I haven't had a big hit like that. And like, you know, I'm probably not putting in the same amount of effort,
but yeah.
at the same time, like, it's just interesting. They have been a little bit bigger, so I'll give it that.
Yeah. And there are some beautiful fish in there. There's some, yes. you know,
I mean, they, high 30s. You can just tell yeah. whenever you see a picture from a fish there, you're like, yep.
Yeah. Now, do you fish tournaments a lot or do you prefer to fish pleasure sessions?
You know, when it was in Austin on my local water and it was with a buddy and it's in my backyard, like it's hard to say no. And I get competitive for sure.
Yeah.
But I also enjoy pleasure fishing my own way, at my own lake, you know, and especially with all the COVID and just work, it's hard to get out.
Yeah. It's such a release, though, isn't it? When you get out there on the bank after dealing with this last year
well,
of nonsense.
Well, I wouldn't say during tournaments. I'm normally exhausted
yeah.
afterwards.
No,
but
pleasure.
Of course, when you're pleasure fishing, you know, you can put in as much or as little work as you want
yeah.
and see the results. Like, And that's, you know, that's my favorite thing about carp fishing is it's like, if I want to go fish a hard lake, I can, or if I want to go fish a super easy lake, I can. Like,
yeah.
How much work are you in reward, you now, know, ratio.
Do you and Frank fish together much?
Yeah, actually, the year before, that's who I was fishing with before I came out to the previous Mill Creek event.
Okay.
Yeah. So we did a week before that. He was, he's a lot of fun to hang
he's
out
a riot,
with.
Isn't he? Honestly.
Yeah, he's a hoot. You know, awesome guy. So he's the best thing in the tackle box is confidence and a good time. Like, if you don't have those going, you're not going to do well.
Well, Frank's not short on period. Either of those. Is
he? So, no. So he, I would have fish fun with him again if he wanted to, of course.
Oh, dear. Now, before you started sort of carp angling down in Austin, were you multi-species angler? And then why all, you know, why did it all of a sudden change for you?
Because I couldn't get the information, so I was stuck hearing the usual BS about bass and catfish. And, you know, I didn't have a boat or anything, so it's like I can't really bass fish too much like that. And it was just one day I decided I'm going to carp fish.
That's awesome. And, yeah.
You know, I took probably a month of watching videos, and all I could do was, like, listen, and then nothing made sense when they talked. I was like, what are these words they're using? Because I have no idea what any of them mean.
Who were your influences earlier on then? When you first started, who were you listening to?
Oh, man. Like, internet-type stuff, you know. I wouldn't say I really – because it's such different – fishing out here, you know. Once I got hooked up with the boys in Austin, they really took off. Like, after that, my catch rate went through the roof. Like, smaller hooks, pack bait, you know, consistent fishing in the same spot, pre-baiting, stuff like that. I wouldn't really say that it, you know, don't get me wrong, I love watching those European videos, but it's just not the same as it is over here.
No, it's totally different.
It's like, it's hard to apply. Like, don't get me wrong, you're gonna learn stuff. It's not that nearly as valuable information over here as it is over there. It's hard to find a way to apply it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, outside of the, you know, the basic hair rig and the technology, it's completely different fishing here, because you've got wild unknown fish, and over there you got fish, you know, in pressured waters. It's similar, I suppose, if you went to fish some of the big massive lakes in Europe, that would be a little bit more.
Yeah, like the Imbro and stuff like that. That looks like an awesome place to go fish, and those fish look like warriors in there too. You know, they're wild river fighting off Wells catfish. And
when did you fish the Imbro?
On my radar.
When did you
It's on my radar. Okay. We've been talking to a dude who guides out there. We're just, you know, since all the COVID and everything, I just had to put all those dreams on hold.
Yeah. Yeah, they're really strong fish out there because they're battling that current, aren't they? And those Wells catfish, like, a couple of hundred pounds or whatever, that would be
at
insane. yeah that would now, have you ever tried fly fishing for them? Because that's been getting popular the last couple
of
years.
I have not had luck. I think it's back to when I was a kid. I was in Colorado and I can't do the cold, and
right.
So all I can think of in fly fishing is standing in the cold, and it's cold, and I don't want to be in the water because I'm freezing. I'm a little skinny Texas boy, and the air's thin up here.
That's right.
But I, you know, my hat's off to those guys. Those guys have patience and really, really get, you know, a thrill out of waiting all day for that one take.
And they've done a lot. They've done a lot for the sport the last few years, Jake. I tell you, the amount of fly anglers that we see coming on board that fish specifically for them on the fly.
Definitely. And those guys, you know, I think they understand more just the motions of the oceans. Probably
the motions
more than
of the ocean. They do. I tell you what, I've learned a lot from them from a watercraft perspective, just from doing a ton of interviews and stuff with them, because they're
exactly,
you know, I mean,
they will walk and
watch, you know, for hours. And the thing is too,
one cast.
That's right. Because you can't stand, like, we can show up at the water, read the water for where we think the fish could be, do some prep and stuff like that, and then set some traps and wait for them. I was having a conversation with one of the members who's a fly angler. You never see a fly angler cast in where there isn't a fish. You know, you got to find the damn thing first. And he said I could walk for miles, you know, and he learned really quickly that if you don't get it right with a carp, you can walk for miles, and that one wrong cast, they're gone, and they ain't going to come back.
Yeah. And so every time I catch a fish fly fishing is when I didn't mean to cast like that.
Right.
I land somewhere weird, and then I get whacked, and I'm like, all right, I'm done.
Right. Now, you've done some...
But my hat's off to those guys for sure.
Yeah, they've done an awful lot for it. And like I said, their watercraft is second to none. Now, I know you've fished a number of different venues across the U.S. Do you have anyone that you'd say is your favorite?
Oh, you know, I hate to put one past the other, like, because you just never know when the next one could be better.
Yeah. Do you prefer bigger waters or smaller waters?
Again, it's just more like what I'm feeling for the weekend. Like, and it drives Jamie insane because she does, where are we fishing this weekend? I was like, well, the weather, the wind, the pressure, the moon, the sun. So I don't know, because the weather could change in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And we got to change the lake we're going to. So it's wherever the wind takes me, because, you know, that lake has a good spot on the north end, but it's a south wind, you know, it's a north wind today. So we need to be on the south side of the lake.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just always stuff like that. You're having to compute everything to try to get your best chance. And it's like, again, do you want to catch big fish or small fish,
or a lot
what
of them
you want to accomplish, and then what lakes are available to make that happen?
Yeah.
And so you're always, it's like, even Ike, the new guy at work, I was like, we're going to go to this lake. And then a cold snap hit midday at noon on Wednesday. And I guess I was like, well, I'd been talking to some of the park guys and ladies trying to get permission to fish. And so he went and bought a license for Missouri. And I was like, well,
we're not going there.
Front, so we're not going there. So he ended up buying two licenses last weekend.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, you know that was no. You know that's not how it works around here. So.
Yeah. Now what about venues here in the US that you haven't fished yet? Are there any that you haven't fished that you'd like to fish?
Definitely Blackfoot.
Yeah. Awesome
definitely
place.
Blackfoot.
Yeah. What's the furthest? Because you've probably done some traveling. What's the furthest you've traveled so far? Have you done any or a lot of fishing outside of the state yet, or?
No, actually, to be honest, I've only fished here in the state.
Yeah.
You know, we got to look at some water when we were over at the Zwala trade show year before last.
Yeah. That's why I wondered when you went over.
I knew I should have brought my rod.
Yeah.
I was like, there's a fucking canal like 5 minutes from our hotel room. And I walked past it.
The thing is out there too, the canals and the little ditches and stuff like that out there are so cool because they have some really big fish.
Well, who knows how old they are? Like, you know, around here, you know, there's no way it's older than 300 years. You know, there's not been carp in there for more than 200 years.
Yeah.
So you got a window like there. Who knows? Like that stuff has been there
centuries,
forever.
Centuries, man. Yeah.
Old time.
And those old character fish there that are literally.
That's what carp like is a consistent. You know, a waterway like a canal that's been like that for 100 years, they can go, all right, this time of year, there's food over here, and this time of year, there's food over here.
Yeah.
And they can do that their whole life and not have to worry about where they're getting their next meal.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's the one thing I look at a lot with these lakes that go up and down all the time. It's like these carp can't get big because they don't know where the food is. They have to continually hunt. And then, like, they have a super successful spawn because the lake's massive and it's in the trees for the springtime. And then they get back down to a shrunken little thing during the winter time.
Yeah, there's a lot of water movement out here, isn't there? Now that doesn't happen in Europe. The only thing that would happen in Europe is if you get floods, you know, like in England, you get floods or something like that. But you bring up a really good point because there's lakes out here where there can be some massive drawdown because a lot of it is in the lake system through the Army Corps of Engineers and stuff, isn't it? They draw it all off. So, yeah, I never thought about that, Jake. That's a really good point.
It's just floodplains. Like, we have that's how that lake is up north from us called Copan. I mean, that thing doubles in size during the spring, and then by the end of summer, it's back to level.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, I can hammer them all day long, but they're no more than 5 pounds. Like, yeah, you might, I will say there's like these cool little, like, black carp in there. They're like gold specks on them. So that was, you know, you get high variety in when you start catching a bunch. But
yeah. Now, do you float fish at all?
You know, I've freaking been putting it off, man.
Dude, you got to do it.
I know you like it.
I love it.
The one freaking carp I caught doing that, I knew something was wrong as soon as it hooked, and yeah, it fought like a champ, and I had it right by the back of the tail.
Yeah. No,
but it's, man,
especially if you've got a place with those smaller fish, right? If you've got a place with smaller fish, 5 to 10 pound fish, you can have so much sport, man. You can have so much sport and so much fun. So much fun because you're using really light tackle, you know.
And that's my whole point. Like, that's why I really like carp fishing. Like, you can make it cool, whatever your opportunity is, you can make it worth your time. And
in regards to time, I'll say if you only have, let's say, a couple of hours, I mean, you could go with the alarms and, you know, the method for a couple of hours with some small baits.
You know, if I don't have to use alarms, I love just fishing like the more recent. Tulsa pond, like during the winter, I take a bag of bread and a hook and a net and a mat. Like, that's all I need is bread, a net, and a mat.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just sit there all day and watch it.
And if you have, you add a float to that, it's so cool because you're, as opposed to just watching the line or the rod tip. I actually did that the other day. I went feeder fishing in a creek around here. And you're just watching the rod tip just pull around a bit with some bread flake on the bottom. Float fishing for them is really active. You're active because it's like little and often.
Always
baiting up, you know. I think you'd really enjoy it. And it seems to be for a short period of time that it kind of stops time. Because if for a shorter period of time, you know, fishing, let's say more Euro traditional on the bottom, I can't get my head around it. But for a couple of hours or something, just a rod, a loaf of bread, like you said, and you're away, you know.
Well, if you got a couple hours each day of the week, and then you got your weekends free,
there you
sometimes go. It's worth just baiting up.
There you go.
go find some new waters, put some bait in the water. That's another good technique.
It is. Now, what do you think social media? Because you've been fishing for carp specifically. How many years now, Jake?
That's
7 or 8 years. And you would have seen through the social media aspect. I mean, you know, us older ones have seen even more of a jump. But how do you think it's impacted the sport, the social media side of things?
You know, I think let's take a step back and first off start by I like carp fishing because you get those diehard carp fishermen that you know ain't going away once they get the bug.
Yeah.
And that's probably what I try to focus on. More, not so much where the riffraff is, just here and there fishing every now and again, but those anglers that get that, you know, they're just like, it's like a light switch.
They're in it for life.
They're just like, this is what I was meant to do. Like, and from there, you know, I think that's what I try to reach towards is those lifelong anglers, like those people that you know ain't going away. And of course, those are the people that you want as the ambassadors towards the sport because they know their stuff and they're the ones telling you, no, carp aren't bad for the water. That's the water's bad.
That's right.
And it's like, you know, because you kind of get the wishy-washy with the people who are, you know, just putting their toes in the water, or whatever, which is cool.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Go have a good time catching whatever fish you want.
Yeah.
You know, just show a little respect.
So my question then, the next question, one of the last ones of the day would be, are there any anglers out there, are there any specific anglers out there that have influenced you or you admire, or is there anyone?
Oh, I mean, you know, I'm definitely grateful for all the anglers I come across. Like it's nice that, you know, are willing to share some time and some tactics and some bank time, of course. And it's like, you know, like Keith Thompson's definitely a good one. Kevin Olivier, you know, Chad and all them. August, I guess he hasn't really fished in a while, but you know, those are just the guys that got me on the fish.
Yeah.
You know, when I first started, and man, they're the ones who taught me how to make pack bait and tie rigs and, you know, the whole nine.
Yeah.
Because I all I knew was basically a hair rig and make these boilies and put it on the hook.
Right. Like, right.
So then you get into, like, I think the biggest thing that Kevin always instilled is like, dude, if you think you should do something, freaking go do it. Like, mm-hmm. don't sit on your butt. Go put a spawn out. Go retie that rig. Like, whatever's in your head, see if that's what the freak needed to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And what would you say, Jake, to any new anglers that were getting into the sport, right? What would be the piece of advice that you would give them?
Dude, confidence is your biggest thing. Like, go and have confidence in what you're doing, and, you know, don't doubt yourself just because you don't catch anything a couple times. Like I've always said, if you're not catching something, that means you're on probably a good lake and that there's some good fish in there, and you shouldn't just like second guess yourself just because a couple. Because I literally went out like 4 or 5 times without catching anything. Mm-hmm. And then I finally caught that one. And, you know, I started, it was like, all right, something's up to this because I'm catching some bigger catfish and this and that. And I had my line broke and straightened my hook out. And I was just like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And so I lots of learning curves there. But if you can find that rhythm where you learn and you do the right things and it just becomes second nature, that's what really makes it fun, is when you're able to be proficient.
It does. And you mentioned something, because it's so funny, because that is the answer that most anglers, you know, any, with any experience, you say, what's the biggest thing? And they say confidence. And then a young angler just getting into it goes, well, where do I get confidence from? How do I buy confidence, or how do I get it? But you actually hit upon something there that was quite profound. It's you following your path, and you getting some consistency with what you're doing, and just having that, you know, that end goal and that vision. I did an interview a number of years ago with Al Sincere, and who's an incredible angler. And, you know, one of the things that he mentioned is you got to be patient. You got to be patient, and you got to have that confidence in the goal that you have. And you got to go after it. You know,
you got to put that extra 2 cents in.
You do. You got to go after it, man. Like you and Frank, like you guys did mm-hmm. at that tournament. And, you know, you were working it. You were working that swim. You were working it. And it's a social tournament type of thing. It's not like we do it for large amounts of money or anything, but you guys
would have been nice.
You were. Well, as things move, you know, as things move forward and they progress,
where's the money event, Sean?
But you guys, well, see, here's the thing, Jakey. We intentionally didn't want to bring that into it, to be honest with you, because there are money tournaments and stuff. What I think we're going to do
is, want a good money tournament, not, you know, filled with like a hell of people, like something serious.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that will happen. Our goal at Mill Creek, at the Mill Creek Cup specifically, is to make it a big social thing every single year, to grow it socially, and to include more prizes, so that there's a lot more actual prizes as well that will be worth, you know, quite a bit of money. But there is a place for money tournaments. And what is your thought then upon that? Because there's a lot of anglers. You know, they love to pleasure fish, or they love to fish in socials, but the money side of it, how do you feel about it?
I mean, that's what brings people, like, that's what gets people's attention. Like, you know, 40 years ago, or not 20 years ago, when that $250,000 fish showed up, like, that's what everyone in Austin talks about when you hear carp fishing. So that's what brings it to the normal people. That's what gets people's ears perked up.
It does, yeah.
And so it's not even so much about – I think the carp anglers will come if you build it. But what I think is important to think about is your reach far beyond that. And that's, you know, of course having a bunch of money is nice, but, you know, no one hears about like these side pot tournaments and stuff like that, because it's just like between the people.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
When it's legitimate and it's posted up $250,000, that gets normal people's, I should maybe try that.
Maybe $250,000. We look at that again at the right time, at the right place.
But I mean, that's just like real world stuff. Like,
and you're right. It does turn heads. I mean, in 2005, when we did the World Carp Championship, that made the front page of the Wall Street Journal, because that had a $1 million bounty on it. So, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Jakey, thank you so much for your time, my friend. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. That's about all we have time for today, guys. I'd like to thank our guest, Jake Downing, for all of his help and time with us. If any of you have questions for Jake, he can reach, obviously, through the American Carp Society's members' Facebook group. Jake, is there any better way for somebody if they need to reach out to you?
Oh, yeah, that works. Facebook is good. A lot of y'all reach out already.
Hit him up at the store. At the store.
Give me a call.
Give him a call.
Find our phone number.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back here same time, same place 2 weeks from now. So don't forget to join us. You can reach out to us here at the American Carp Society through Facebook and Instagram, Pinterest, and Twitter. Tag us with your captures with hashtag American Carp Society and hashtag join the guilty ones, and we will feature you on the feed. You can contact me directly with any questions, Sean at AmericanCarpSociety.com. Be lucky.